It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as always, chipper, bright, live, and all that stuff, so that we can impart a little current information to people and hopefully answer some questions. Show is always providing information, I guess. Guess what the difference is? We'll tell you what we think you might want to hear unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and then you can tell us what you want to hear. Rules of the show, very simple. You call in, you get put on the air right away. We'll interrupt just about anything I have ever encountered to put a caller on, so have no fear. We don't bite. Easy questions are fine. Other people don't know the answers either, and besides, they make us look good. So the easier your question, the better we look, and that means we'll love you even more. How's that?
I like it.
I thought you might. But if they're hard ones, we have two rules there, too. We'll either answer it because we know, or we'll get back to you because we don't.
What we will not do is make up something and try to look smart by lying to you.
No, that's what I do in the office.
Yeah, obviously.
But not on the radio. Just kidding. No, but that is a little something that we adhere to. You can, if you are unwilling to stick your neck out and actually go on the air, you can send us an email during the show or anytime, for that matter, at info@vanweefinancial.com, and we will address it when we get it, which could be either during the program or on next week's program. So there's any number of ways to get your questions answered. The most fun, obviously, the reason we do live radio is when people call in and we talk live. There aren't that many hosts that are willing to stick their neck out every week and go live. I always wonder what they fear. You're going to get a question you can't answer, or mumble your words, or look like a Joe Biden debate, or something like that. Adam, no, I couldn't resist.
No, you couldn't.
Anyway, another week has gone by, an unremarkable week in the market, I would say, but a very remarkable week outside the market. And I was just telling Angela as we were crossing paths here between shows that what could have happened this week and didn't was really something, because there was a lot of stuff going on. You know, COVID cases spiking a bit, and the debates and the upcoming election and this and that. The uncertainty level out there seems very high, and the market seems to be plodding along with it reasonably well. So I'll let Adam take it from there.
Yeah, it was an interesting week. I agree that there was a lot of debate, it looked like, about what the market is going to do next. A lot of buying and a lot of selling, and you could see every time the market made a move in one direction, it immediately started to retreat the other direction. That was both ways, so both up and
down.
And
that was before noon.
Yeah, but it never got really out of hand. It was like the Dow would move 100, 150 points, and then come back to zero, and then go negative, and then come back. It was, and it happened all week. So, pretty interesting trend. My general rule about the market is if it's in within 1% on any given day or week, that it's flat. So, I would really call this a flat week, because the only one that moved more than 1% was the NASDAQ. It was down 1.1%. It's been a little more volatile, well, a lot more volatile than the other two indexes this year, and that trend continued this week. But there is a lot of questions on everyone's minds, and there's three main ones that I think: who will win the presidency, who will win the Congress, and what happens with COVID now that winter is here and cases appear to be rising, and rising fairly rapidly in places that hadn't previously seen spikes like they are. So, some interesting things going on. The first two questions won't be settled until early November at the earliest, possibly later. And the winter, as the weather has gotten colder, COVID seems to be rising in places that are experiencing that. So think Midwestern towns where we're seeing snow already, that they're getting hit kind of hard right now. The good news is that deaths have not been rising at the same rate as cases. Now they did see a minor tick up this week, but it hasn't been anything like the case count. So I think that between knowing more about the virus, how it works, how to treat it, and the new drugs that they're using for it, that's a good sign for the overall health of people seeing living in those areas where they're seeing the spikes. So it's the U.S. is not alone in this. The European Union is really, really getting hit hard by COVID right now. They're going, in some cases, back to lockdowns, which are not being very well accepted by the citizens of those places.
To say the least.
Yeah, and the CDC and the WHO, I think, have both come out against doing further lockdowns, so it's surprising to see them happening. But there's a lot of they're seeing a lot of negative effects of the lockdowns as well, even and weighing them out, it doesn't make sense to do them. At least that's what the science is telling us today. So who knows if that'll change. The S&P declined just over 0.5% this week, while the Dow dropped almost 1%, and the NASDAQ, as I mentioned, just 1.1%. The drop actually took the Dow back to negative for the year, but the S&P still has a nice 7.3% gain, and the NASDAQ is still up almost 29% in 2020. All three indexes are still positive for the fourth quarter, so really not too bad.
What Dow component do you think is really stinking up the place?
You know, I didn't really look at it this week.
I thought about that, but it wasn't at a time when I could do something about it. But something's holding it back. I don't know. It might be Boeing.
I honestly, I didn't look at the specific components. Of course, components.
The Dow would be much higher had we not had a couple of stock splits.
It does affect it. And we've had a couple of new additions and a couple of companies drop out recently as well. So a lot of changes to the Dow this year. I hate the Dow as a measure of the U.S. economy.
And it's not how you should consider whether or not you're making money.
No.
If you're beating the Dow, pat yourself on the back, but not very hard.
No. The S&P should be your benchmark, in my opinion. And really, if you want to get technical, I would look at maybe the Wilshire 5000 index. Exactly. That's the total market index. Earnings season continues to roll along, and 229 companies have now reported. And overall, the reports are extremely strong. I mean, off the charts strong. So far,
records.
84.3% of companies have beat on earnings. And I've never seen a number that high. 79% are beating on revenue. Again, the highest number I've ever seen.
Well, there's a reason for that. It's the highest number ever reported.
Well, that could be. That's a good reason.
Yeah.
Almost 18% of companies are raising forward guidance as well, which it's got to be a record as well. The last quarter was the best I'd ever seen at 11.6. Mm-hmm. And this is a full, 70% higher than that. So. Mm-hmm. It's pretty remarkable.
That's the numbers amazing. I could look at it graphically on a chart of it. That spike at the end is unbelievable.
Now, there's a big asterisk on everything I just said.
Yes,
these numbers are subject to change as more companies report. But if the season ended today, it would break multiple records. And despite all of that, the stocks that have reported these numbers haven't been treated particularly well by investors, which is strange. I'm not sure if that's caused by inflated that stock prices got in ahead of themselves, and we are in mostly overbought territory, so that's possible, or there was just really an anticipation that this would be a huge blowout quarter that people weren't analysts weren't picking up on that. I'm not sure why the reason is behind that, but
double
that is
asterisk,
what we're seeing.
They also know that these numbers look that good because the diminished expectations that they're comparing to.
Yes, but everything's been still raising going into the season and last season, too. So I think the anticipation is that this season would be pretty good.
And if you take out a couple of asset classes, things are looking even better. Mm-hmm. There's some things that have been really hurt. So if you're doing well right now, you're doing really well right now. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a couple minutes. But we got to take a quick break and sell some stuff, and we'll see you at the other side. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question sponsored, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888 by shopping the 904, as they say. All right. Let's talk about real estate. Howard and Angela were talking about it. They've been having a good time this year. Pretty hard to keep the smiles off their faces.
Mm-hmm.
How's business? Oh, just really, 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 really good, thanks. And that's true, because the real estate market is one of the high spots of the recovering economy. So my question today is, how many hours does it take the average non-supervisory worker, just think hourly worker, how many hours a month does it take the average hourly worker to make the mortgage payment? And that's a recent number. I'll give you some history on too when somebody gets it. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Excellent. You?
Great. Hey, you guys are really appreciated as fiduciaries and advisors, because there's so much shifting in today's world, and then there's so much that we don't know how things, you know, in the crystal ball are going to play out moving forward. One of the things, you know, you were talking about, I was looking at and your ability to look at trends and then say, this is where we need to be financially. This is what we need to be invested in. You know, the commercial real estate market, I don't think we've really seen the effects of people working at home yet in terms of how the commercial real estate market's going to do with people being able to work from home. I'm seeing in Florida here all kinds of license plates that you don't normally find unless it's vacation time. You know,
right,
people have really scattered. And your office and you people, you know, Van Wee Financial's ability to look at that and, you know, look at the trends and see the shifting trends, you know, from an Eagle's view, I think is even more valuable today. We don't know how things are going to work out and which way things are going to go. I want to give you guys kudos for some of the things that you point out on the show.
Every week. Very kind of you, and we appreciate it. I wish, personally, that we were even better at this.
Yep, me too, but... Yeah. We'd do our best, for sure.
Yep.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome.
Did you want to take a shot at the trivia question?
Sure. I'd say how many hours per month, right, to make the mortgage payment,
yep.
Correct?
Yes.
I'd say 53.
Yeah. Too high.
Okay.
But it's been coming down. It was much higher than that, I'll tell you that. But it's been coming down nicely because interest rates are down and prices are not rising as fast as the interest rates are coming down.
And incomes, at least incomes, prior to COVID, were way, way up as well.
The average hourly earnings have gone so far up that it's all having a very positive impact. When you put it all together, it's really no wonder the market is hot right now.
And there's where you guys are good at spotting those trends. So.
Well, you know, I bring in a trivia question every Saturday. And I try to find something that I didn't know yesterday.
There you go.
I either look through stuff or I develop something. I ask myself a question or whatever. And when I see something I didn't know and it seems to fit into either the trends or the investment styles or whatever. In other words, is it relevant? Plus, I like to make all of you think. The talk radio listeners are truly the smartest group of people out there, the smartest consumer group. And I love the way they think. And even if you don't get it exactly right, it's the thought process, because that's what will help you stay ahead of where we are right now and where we're going.
Well, that's very true, and I thank you for that. It's we all need more time to think. I think people, that's a lost art in terms
yeah.
of...
no doubt about it.
Well, think of all those commuting hours we're not doing anymore, so you can spend your time thinking.
I know.
Stick that in the bank.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
All right, take care. Right. Thank you. We really appreciate you listening.
No problem.
That's an interesting subject you brought up about commercial real estate, because I've been doing some research on commercial real estate recently, only at the beach. And it's definitely seen a shift in the market, and I've talked to my broker about it, and she agrees that it's interesting. There's still not anything, well, much of anything for sale. But the number of vacant leases has gone way up.
So, I believe.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But that you still can't find a place to buy. So I don't know what the reason. I guess people are still bullish long term on commercial real estate.
I think probably, especially in an area like this.
But it's short term leases and things like that. There's a lot more available property than there was a year ago.
I heard a stat this morning on the news. Rents in New York City have just broken the $3,000 a month on the downside.
Oh, interesting.
First time in years.
Is that a median price, or what is that?
Yeah, just a rental, an apartment rental, and it must be a median.
Yeah, something like, or an average.
$3,000. You know, if it goes much lower, they could get rid of rent control.
The rent control might not look good at that point.
Exactly, and then just let the market do what the market will do, and it would be good in the long run for everybody.
Yeah. It's true.
Now, that said, how about a snowball's chance in Ponte Vedra?
Yeah, never going to happen.
No. It just occurred to me. We probably shouldn't even tell everybody how many hours we agonize over what to do and not to do until we make a decision that we can both live with. Because it is scary out there. You
know, yeah,
when this thing hit,
sure is.
We had to make a decision, and I kind of thank my lucky stars that we had as little information as we did, because it happened so fast that even if we had decided to react to it, we wouldn't have, because it was too late already.
Exactly. And those down days were
huge scary.
Down days.
Yeah,
I mean, we were talking 800 to 1,000 points a day going down. And by the time you sell out, you've already lost 2,000 points.
The prior two times that that happened, there was a December and a January over the last 4 years or so. The prior two times when the market started to tank, we looked at each other, and these were easy. We said, why? And we each said to the other one,
there's no reason.
No,
there wasn't.
Well, what do you do when there's no reason for what's going on? You sit back and wait. And that's exactly what we did, and it all came right back, and everything was fine. Well, this time we said, why? We said, scary new virus.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be something that I don't know if I had the opportunity to see that coming or understand it better as it did. I don't know if I would have done anything or not, but I might have.
If I knew what I know now, I mean, obviously, in hindsight, you can say,
well, yeah, we'd sell for a week and buy back.
Yeah.
but yeah, try that sometime.
Yeah, you can't make that decision without all the information, which we didn't have at the time.
That is not only dumb in retrospect. That would be dumb concurrently with when you did it.
Yeah, it's a tough call, because by the time you sit back to analyze these things, you already have information that you didn't have back then. And it's easy to beat yourself up by saying, oh, you should have seen that coming. But how many people did see it coming?
Yeah, I wrote an article many years ago when I was writing for the magazine in Palm Coast called Woulda, Coulda, Shoulda Financial Planning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not very effective when you think about it.
Definitely not.
I would have done this. Oh, I should have done that. No, the statistics are the statistics, and my favorite one of all is that on January 20th, 1981, Ronald Reagan was inaugurated for the first time. The Dow stood at 954. We've been through 1987 crash, 2001, 2002 crash of this, the crash of that, the COVID and that. Yeah, the whole real estate crisis, the financial crisis. We've been through hell and back many, many times, and the Dow sits today at 28,335.
Yeah,
from 954.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Now, what does that tell a sane person with time before needing the money? Get in, stay in, monitor, make some strategic or tactical little changes as you go by, but don't try to time the market, because you will be wrong.
And the worst part about timing the market is you don't have to be right once. You have to be right twice. When do you get out, and then when do you get back in?
Now, how many times have we seen that where people jumped out of the market at a certain level and it continued falling and they were feeling really good? And then it started coming up. And
but
then
they got hesitant. They don't trust it.
Yep. Is this the end? I'll tell you how that could have happened, could have affected me, but I fortunately learned my lesson first, was in 2007, 8, and 9. In 2007, when it started to fall, and it kept falling and falling and falling. And you know, that was about a 50% loss in equities during that time. And then on March 9th of 09, got up and the market opened up again and it crashed again. And, you know, here we go again, just another day. But then it stopped. And then it sort of turned the corner and started inching up. Well, okay, we'd had a lot of those over the last 18 months.
False starts.
Yeah. Sure. Dead cat bounces, whatever you want to call it. But then it started going up, and it kept going up. And that was, like I said, the 9th of March 2009. And I think it was till about the 4th of July when I finally allowed myself to believe that this was over. Now, if we had gotten out in late 07 or any time in 08 or early 09 and wanted to get back in, we would have missed 30% or so, because we were so uncomfortable with the possibility that that market was coming back, that we were far better off in the long run to have done nothing at all. And it was just another lesson, but a darn hard one.
No doubt about it.
Now, we could say the same thing for the election, and we will obviously be talking about some of that in the second half of the show, because there are parts of this election that deal with your money, my money, and what we got left, and what we should do, and what we drive, and everything else. So hang on for that. And any questions you have, get them ready. I'll repeat the trivia question very briefly. How many hours does the average hourly worker have to work in order to pay his mortgage? Now, these are averages, of course, or medians, and it's sort of a guideline more than a specific thing, but think about this. It's less than 53 hours a month, which isn't bad, I think. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I will repeat the trivia question again. Is that redundant? Repeat it again? I guess it is. I already did repeat it, so maybe not. No. Esoteric question. Or rhetorical. On average, an hourly worker in this country today has to work how many hours a month to pay for his American dream, the mortgage on the house? We know it's under 53, which I find to be very good news.
It is good news. I guessed higher than that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you didn't miss it by anything except a little bit of time.
Yeah, 5 years ago, I probably would have been right.
Yeah, in August of 2015, so there you go, 5 years ago, it was over 60.
Yep.
Now, if you're working 60 hours, that's about another, 3 days, 2.5 days of your every month just to pay your mortgage. Well, I like the fact that that money's going into their pocket now.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's potentially free cash flow to spend on whatever you want to spend.
Yeah, and the interesting part of that also is that the homeowner doesn't get the break on the taxes that he or she used to. So when you're working more to pay it and the interest rates are higher, you're probably getting some assistance by your taxes because you're going to write off the mortgage interest. But nowadays, under the Tax Act in 2017, the standard deduction is so high that very few people itemize anymore. So now your goal is to make the absolute lowest payment you can make. There's nothing, benefits for doing it any other way.
Which is great, because then you have a decision to make. Do you save that money for your retirement or for a big purchase? Or you can go out and spend it, which stimulates the economy and provides jobs for other people. So it's really a win-win.
Yeah, the homeowners today are they're in the catbird seat in many respects. But we were talking briefly with Howard after the last show, too, about what's happening in the market and how many people now are changing their priorities in their homes, because they were talking this morning about people want a patio and a screen porch and things like that because they're spending so much more time at home because of COVID. And a lot of them aren't going back to commuting. And he was talking about all the different license plates they're seeing around here now, and it's not the time of year when you usually think of that. But what would happen, what if you were someone working in Seattle for Microsoft or in New York for whoever?
Chicago.
Yeah, and they said, you can live wherever you want to live, and you don't have to wait till you retire. Yep. I know what I'd do. Zoom.
I have a friend in Chicago that's threatening to come down here this winter because his wife has told him that if she leaves him cooped up in the apartment with their two kids for all of the winter,
somebody's got to go. I could see that one. I love it. And who will be one of the great beneficiaries?
Florida.
And as goes Florida, so goes the real estate market. And as goes the real estate market in Florida, all of us who are homeowners just sit back and smile.
No doubt about it.
Gotta love it. So if you're looking for some good news in this world of hurt that we call 2020, you can find it. Not 100% bad. All right, a few more things to wrap up the market this week.
Yeah, well, we're talking about housing, might as well stick with that.
Sure.
There was not a lot of economic data this week. There were just 12 reports, but only two of them missed expectations. Everything else beat. It really doesn't get much better than that, 10 out of 12. Housing starts were, ironically, one of the things that missed. They were lower than forecast. And then the other one was the Bloomberg consumer comfort number, slightly lower than forecast. But there was a lot of housing data, and the rest of it was just off the charts. Home builder sentiment was higher than expected. Building permits beat. Mortgage applications rose week over week. And existing home sales beat expectations. So really strong data, housing data across the board. Jobs numbers both looked really good. Initial claims came in at 787,000 versus 870,000 expected, so almost 100,000 lower. And continuing claims dropped from 10 million down to 8.4 million this week.
That was impressive.
Big, big drop.
Yeah, very impressive. Good morning. I would guess that CAPT is short for Captain Dave.
It sure is, guys. How are you?
Excellent. You?
I'm just fine. You were just talking about telecommuting and all that.
Yeah.
I've been here 25 years, which makes me a damn Yankee. But I got a T-shirt that says, "Don't New York up my Florida."
I've seen that.
That's excellent. Excellent.
And that's what I got to say. Don't come down here with your all Northeast stuff. Listen, I'm born and raised in South Philadelphia, so I know a little bit about that. Don't come down here with that stuff.
No.
Look at the way it is.
There are about 22 million of us who think you are dead right.
All right, guys, have a great weekend.
Take care of yourself.
Bye.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Mr. Van Wee. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Anytime.
My question today is about options. I bought 100 shares of let's just say ABC stock, and I sold an option that expires on the 30th of October.
Okay.
And the price of the option has already been exceeded, and I'm curious to find out when they will exercise the option. Now, like if, let's say Tuesday goes up another $3 or so, can they go ahead and buy the stock at that point, or do they have to wait till Friday?
You're talking about a call?
Yes, a call. I'm sorry.
Okay.
A covered call, I guess
you'd call it. You never know is the answer to that.
Nope.
It's up to the other person.
That is listed out there in the space, in the options space, where a lot of people cruise. And any day they want to, prior to the expiration, they can just take it from you.
Exercise it,
and then they'll sell. Yep. Usually they'll sell.
Yeah, take the profit margin. Yeah. And
this is a simultaneous transaction. You buy yours and sell it, and then you just pocket the money. So there is no answer to that except to wait and see.
And they might miss their window, and the stock might drop back below, and then the option will just expire, and nothing will happen. So you just have to wait and see.
If you learn how to chart the profits and losses on an option of any type, actually, you can see exactly what price range will take you, exactly how much profit, and you decide. Because that's once you see where it is and where it might be going and what it could do, then all you got to do is say, "I'm identifying my own risk, and that's as much as I want to take." And boom, you can sell it. If you offer to sell it, somebody will buy it. But if you think it's going to come out, then it will. And that's a funny thing about the options market. That's why it's so difficult. And we don't do it. I know how to do it, but I don't do it. The CFP board does not enjoy hearing about people using options for certified financial planners like us. But sure doesn't make it wrong. It just makes it kind of risky. But
well,
if you're
doing
it your way.
Not selling covered calls.
You're doing it your way. Yeah. You have mitigated your risk as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, unfortunately, in this situation, if the stock continues to go up, you've also limited your upside. But that you knew that getting into it, so you just have to accept that. And
you have a little cash in the bank
already.
Peel off
the income from the call, and that's it.
So it's not something that there is a definitive answer to, except that something will happen if it stays above the strike price.
Right.
Might not happen until the 30th? Might.
Yep.
Never know. You'll know the next day because it won't be in your account anymore. That's usually when I used to do this a lot in the early 2000s. It was always the surprise when you were thinking expiration date's coming up Friday, and maybe you wake up on Wednesday morning, it's not there anymore. Somebody just hit their price, hit their risk thing, and shelled out the money, and now they've got it. And if it's still going up, they'll probably make a few bucks if they wait, too.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Right.
You can either pocket it or you can extend your risk if you don't wait till options day. But that's the answer, unfortunately. I wish I could be more definitive.
No, that was fine.
Do you want to take a shot at our trivia question?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to relate a little bit more about the option. I sold an $82 strike price, and it just closed right on the border of 82 on Friday.
Well, you'll own it Monday then.
I got $3 a share, so the way I'm thinking, it has to get to at least 85.
Yeah, for you to lose money.
Right.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love it. If you learn how to do those things, it's a good thing.
And it expires at the end of the month. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds like you did the right. I mean, you're probably gonna win either way.
Yeah.
You might miss out on another couple bucks, but it's not a terrible decision.
Okay.
Worst case scenario is I make $500.
Yeah.
I paid $880 for the stock, and I might sell it at $82 and get the $300 that I already have.
There you go.
Yeah. Good for you. All right, do you want to shoot out a quick number for the number of hours somebody has to work?
How about in honor of the late, great Walter Payton, I'll say 34.
I love it, but a little bit low, but you're on the right track. We appreciate your call. Thank you. All right, we'll be right back after a short break for the final segment. You're listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. And as the saying goes around my house, let Troy do it. How about that? Now, we have a call that I'm going to take right now after one little mea culpa. Last week, Adam said that we were out of the recession that we had, and I doubted him because I wasn't sure that we had an actual recession defined, that we had a GDP negative growth. Two consecutive quarters, which is the only definition that counts. I said I didn't think we were. I was wrong. He was right. The first and second were both negative. I stand corrected. Now, never mention it again.
I won't gloat.
Yeah,
too
right.
much.
Right. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Live, no jive. I got a quick guess.
Oh, good.
43.5.
Somebody's been doing some homework.
I'm doing a little, I use paper.
Well, you want to know the interesting thing about that? If you take the traditional work week at 2080, work year, I mean, at 2,080 hours, and you take this number, multiply it by 12, you get 25%.
Wow.
And that is just a lovely, lovely number, is it not?
It is.
Now, 30% is what the experts say that you should put your housing into your housing. Get 25% for the mortgage, and that leaves you 5% for taxes and all that stuff. And that's pretty darn good these days. So, and as I mentioned a little bit ago, it's down from over 60 in just 5 years. Things are good. All right, we'll put you on hold, and producer will grab your stats, and we'll send you a little something from First Coast Alarm.
Quick method. My method was add the high and the low and divide by.
I like it.
And take half.
I love it.
Nice work.
I don't use a computer.
No. See, that's what I said. The talk radio listeners are smart. They think right.
Well, and we try hard.
You just proved it. All right, take
just
care.
Quick disclaimer. Part of this answer may be pre-recorded.
I missed that.
Part of
this answer may be pre-recorded.
Oh.
Y'all be good.
All right, be good. It's funny. But it is true. You know, I like it when people think, and there's always, I don't come in here without a reason for a trivia question. I've had worked at some other places where they didn't like the concept that they thought it was a waste of time to do trivia questions. I said, not mine.
No, because it brings up a good point that
we're always trying
two
to make
things
a point.
Have been happening, and it's lowered that number substantially. And one is that wages have been rising so fast, and the other is that interest rates have come down so far. And guess who wins? Homeowners.
Yeah. Does anybody really think that the hot real estate market right now isn't directly related to this?
Oh, partially. I mean, it's partially related to
correlated.
Wages. Yeah, and it's partially related to interest rates.
Yeah,
and then another portion is attributable to COVID and people moving and looking for a different lifestyle. There's so many factors going in, and
it's the perfect storm, maybe you'd call it the perfect calm.
I never would have guessed that this would be the result of a global pandemic, but here we are.
We miss this.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought
I would have guessed the total opposite.
Honestly. I would have thought it, yeah, to take longer and be slower coming back.
Yep.
And no doubt. What a wonderful surprise to have happen. I don't mind pleasant surprises ever.
Nope. So I missed the housing market trend. I wouldn't have guessed that one, but I did get one right.
Yes, you did.
And that is long-term treasuries. The ETF that we follow, TLT, is it holds long-term treasuries, and this week it dropped below its 200-day moving average for the first time in a long time. Definitely a bearish signal. Interest rates on the long end of the curve are rising right now, and that is what's causing this. So that's a good sign for the future, because it means that people are more bullish about the future than they were a year ago. But I would not be in long-term treasuries right now if I were you.
They had been up 41%.
I don't remember at one point.
Yeah, I don't remember what time frame that took. But bonds don't move like that, people.
The
average standard deviation of a bond fund is about 6%.
Now, longer bonds obviously have higher deviation, but still, I just would stay away from it. But an area that I'm looking at right now is emerging markets. They continue to do well. They've made new highs recently. And they've been kind of stagnant for a while, and now we're seeing some action that I like. So just something I'm keeping an eye on. If you compare the U.S. market to a lot of worldwide markets right now, we are very, very pricey.
Yeah.
There's some European markets that look like an absolute bargain. If they can get through this COVID thing, I would be even more apt to take a look at them. So just keep an eye out right now. I really am more bullish on international stocks than I have been since we opened this company.
And this may sound a little bit odd, but it's not always the developed countries.
No.
And right now, emerging markets are looking like a really good deal.
So just a few things to keep an eye on. Another thing to keep an eye on, though, is bullish sentiment. Increased this week and bearish sentiment decreased. Now, if you follow the show, you know that we don't like that. We like the opposite of that. When bullish sentiment goes down, we consider that a contrarian indicator,
right.
and that's a good thing. But this is a little bit different. When this exact scenario has happened, forward returns have been better than average, with one notable exception, and that was in 2008. When the market was 37% lower 12 months from now. So I guess you can't win them all, but the other 9 or 10 times this exact scenario has happened, the market returns have been better than average going forward. So what are we in now? I don't know, but there is a scenario where stocks push higher from here. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, whenever you use 2008 in any statistic, it's always a little bit of a red flag.
Sure.
Because what caused that was so unusual, and we hope will not be repeated. And it's arguable that we're setting up some of the same conditions, because credit ratings for mortgages and that sort of thing are not nearly as stringent as they had been in the post-08 world. But we're a long, long ways from insolvent I don't want to put it that way. We owe a lot of money as a country, but
we do.
But as a society that's functioning day to day, we're doing rather well. Now, I could get into that. I could talk for an hour nonstop about all the money we're spending and the pros and the cons and all that stuff. It's not worth it. We're going to be spending money. And speaking of the election,
I don't want to get too political, but this is just too good to pass up. So Trump got a new voter this week on Monday.
Yep.
Rapper 50 Cent. Endorsed Trump after seeing Biden's tax plan.
Yep.
And he came out and posted a tweet about it. He got some backlash, as you might imagine. And so on Wednesday, he kind of doubled down by sending out another tweet that said, "I don't want to be 20 Cent."
Yep.
And it was all about
the political line of the season.
All about the proposed tax plan and the specifically the treatment of capital gains. He was not a fan when he saw what would happen to his tax rate if Biden is elected.
Well, if you live in the wrong place,
he lives in New York.
60%.
Yeah. It was 62%.
Yeah, 62, exactly.
And he said, the quote was, 62%, you're out of your bleeping mind.
Can I raise the price of my output, his music, by 62%? No. Can I raise it by 22%? No. That It's just insanity. Now, speaking of that kind of thing, I talked a little bit about COLAs, cost of living increases. There was a release that said the Social Security increase for next year be 1.3%. Well, while not fantastic, it's better than the zero that was predicted not long ago. So, okay, I looked further into it. And then a couple of Democrat congressmen, and I give them full credit for this, they did a proposal to make that 3%, just legislate 3%. And I support it 100% because in the past 20 years, the purchasing power of Social Security has lost 30%.
Hmm.
And only recently, in 2018, they changed the cost of living index to what they call the chained CPI.
One of my least favorite ideas in history.
Well, here's what it did. If the cost of living for the unchained CPI was 1.3, the CPI for chained came in 1.0. So that little 3/10 adds on to the continuing losses to Social Security. Now, this government ought to be so ashamed of that. But they also stacked on it this one for you. Medicare rates are going up, get ready, 6%.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so yeah. Who's losing? You're listening to them, and you're also one of them yourself. I don't know how they do it. See you next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.